Welcome to the Victory Show.
Welcome to the Victory Show, where seven-figure founders, entrepreneurs, and executives reveal the real playbook behind scaling past that first million in recurring revenue. We go beyond the highlight reel into the hard lessons, costly mistakes, key growth inflection points, and the human decisions that shaped the numbers. And here's the twist. Every conversation becomes a chapter in my Victory book series, so the next generation of builders doesn't have to start from scratch. My guest today is Meenop Nguyen Nagayan. She's the CEO of Secured IT Solutions, a firm that supports both federal agencies and private sector organizations with world-class cybersecurity, consulting, risk management, and technology leadership. With over 25 years of experience in information systems and cybersecurity, Meenop has built a reputation for helping leaders translate risk into smart strategic business decisions. Now, her work spans engineering firms, tech startups, data centers, nonprofits, and of course, government agencies, proving that effective security is both a technical and a human challenge. She's also a principal instructor with the SANS Institute, where she mentors and trains the next generation of cybersecurity professionals, bringing clarity, discipline, and resilience to a field that demands all three. Meenop, thank you so much for taking time out of your day to be here.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I'm honored and excited to be here.
I feel like we have so many things we could talk about. Like right now, cybersecurity is, it seems like every time we turn around, there's some sort of breach somewhere. Everybody's scared about everything. We hear about like data stealing, China stealing all your data, right? So, and the fact that you've worked with governments all the way down to nonprofits, that to me is fascinating. So we'll get into to cybersecurity a little bit, but give me a little bit of your background. Like, what took you into the tech industry and cybersecurity specifically?
Yeah, so I actually started my career in IT, right? So I started when cybersecurity was not even a degree. Not many people really understood what cyber was. So I remember even when I had individuals ask me, like, what do you do, Meenop? And I said, cybersecurity. And they're like, what's that? Is that a company? Like, so I started in IT and was very fortunate to land my first job at a federal government contractor, large federal government contractor with Bechtel and SAIC. For a large one, unique project at that time. And that kind of led me to cybersecurity. With that, that was where it was such a unique and controversial project. It was out here called the Yucca Mountain Project. So, Senator Reid was very huge. Harry Reid was very huge about not having that project here. So saw the writing on the wall and it got really defunded. There is still an act that it's a federal law that we still have to have a solution that would need a project like the Yucca Mountain Project. However, I saw the writing on the wall and decided that I would go somewhere else. And I was lucky that I got tapped on the shoulders by Los Alamos National Laboratory. So we've seen Oppenheimer, the movie Oppenheimer.
Yeah,
Los Alamos was selected. So it was very big with regards to me starting my career in consulting for Los Alamos National Laboratory to kind of help them with their issue, which is another story that I could talk about later on. Or if we ever have time, but I went over there and worked for a small business to consult for them. And because, you know, I'm from born and raised in Albuquerque, New Mexico.
All right.
You know, not
so you were
far.
Right. You were just in the suburb from right down the street from home.
Yeah, right. So my parents are still there, right down the street. Thought it'd be okay. But I didn't realize that there was a reason why I moved away from Albuquerque and even worse, Los Alamos, which is about an hour and a half, depending on how fast you go away from Albuquerque. Yeah. So I decided to try to do some business development and get some work out here in Las Vegas, where I'm at. And because I was doing that business development, and lucky for me, I learned about this business development and strategizing about opportunities when I was with the larger contractors. I was fortunate to be selected as their next leaders, and they were grooming their next gen leaders. And part of that was to help these next gen leaders understand the strategy of grabbing large multi-billion dollar contracts from the federal government. So you're looking at 8 to 15 years out. And so where these contracts are going out. So they trained us, groomed us, and then I went to that small business. And when I did that, I was able to start understanding like, oh, all these business development BD endeavors to get work in Las Vegas. I did that, worked that for a little bit, but needed some experience in the private sector. And being in that we were in the gaming hospitality kind of capital, I wanted to find a business that would be able to help me get that experience. So I jump shipped to work for this small woman-owned business. That business needed to have a cybersecurity practice and a government practice opened. It aligned really well to my growth and helped me understand, like, one, how to grow a business and how to grow in the practice of things that I know. So I was able to do that after joining that company and growing that business. I think when I joined, it was like 16 million. And then when I left, it was, I think, around, like, if I remember correctly, 36 million.
Two and a half times.
Yeah. So I thought, hey, if I can do it for that business, let's do it for myself. And so I started to do that because I learned that sometimes your management philosophies don't align to the.
Oh, it happens.
Yeah. And I've said this, like, also my education and my training led me down to a different management philosophy than what I see some other entrepreneurs have. Like, not all entrepreneurs have the same education and training path that
Sure.
one person has. And so it all kind of, it differs, right? So I decided to open my own business, and that's how I got here to support different organizations and entities and enterprises for
Wow.
cybersecurity and IT.
All right. So two things out of everything you just said. The first one was when you were in Los Alamos on your lunch breaks, did you go sneak around the stealth bombers?
Yeah, like, there is nothing around but probably doing all that stuff, right? So you want to take short lunch breaks because you want to leave work, like, on time, because things close like around 6 o'clock. Like, if you have not gone home and gone to the store at 6 o'clock, it's too bad.
Close. That's funny.
Everything is closed. Yeah.
Well, we have a small connection to Los Alamos, and my brother was in the Air Force, and he was stationed there for about 2 years, I think, or 3 years, but working on the stealth bombers. So there you go. That's why I know about that.
Okay. Well, there's so many things that they're working on, and it's just amazing. And there's so many different divisions. And you think about all these smart people, like all these astrophysicists, PhDs, and like nuclear aspects, right? And it's nice to see all that brain power in just one area. And there's kind of pros and cons to both sides,
You're
right?
like in the middle of nowhere, surrounded by a bunch of
Yeah. And
nerds.
unfortunately, these individuals sometimes. Some other aspects just don't align, but yeah.
Yeah, that's funny. All right, so with working with the company, this the woman in owned business, it was doing 16 million. You helped grow it to 32 million. What were sort of two or three of the big lessons that you learned being part of that process? And then what were two or three of the big mistakes that you as in a team did as you went along and went back and went, oops, we shouldn't have done that.
Yeah. Well, I think there is a lot of good things that they had with regards to the ability to really know the client, like, go in there to anyone and just really, like, have, like, understanding, like, all the leaders in the valley, right? So it was like weekly meetings and kind of knowing all that stuff. But a good growth was the CEO was very good about meeting these leaders and showing the leaders and really playing to. We all have egos, but really playing to, like, and praising them about their accomplishments and then giving them a path of, like, beyond your current position, here's a path forwards. And that worked really well, right? Because there was a lot of high executives who are like, yeah, I may not want to stay here forever. I need another path. And I
Sure.
saw that, and the CEO was, she's very good at that. Something that, I try to mimic myself, but it's difficult. That is a talent that she had.
Just being able to see the good in people and calling it out and recognizing them for it.
It's not just good people, but giving them the opportunity, like, hey, I might have a path for you for future. So giving them
I got,
another
yeah.
door, right? Like, it's like not about now. It's about, like, hey, you're so awesome. Like, what have you thought about, like, as you go through? But she was able to either saying that she could give them opportunities or, like, facilitate that. And
Sure.
whether it
So
was.
she was a dreamer. She was painting a vision for them and enrolling them in that.
I think that's a nice way to,
That
yeah, that's a good way to
is a
do it.
good, yeah, that is a skill for sure.
Yeah. Like, dreaming it out and making it sound like it could be realized, but it's still a dream.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
And then what
So
do we, I sorry, I was going to answer the other, what
yeah,
do we
sure, go.
mistakes? I think mistakes that we have is kind of the flip side. I think every coins have two sides of it, right? Of heads and tails. So
Yeah.
while she was a dreamer, there are certain things that you can't execute. Because the reality is there are certain things that cannot be executed.
Oh.
So, if I've said this before, a strategy without an implementable plan is just a dream. So there was a lot of dreams. So the dreams can be sold to some clients, but then some things cannot be executed because one, it just wasn't there. And then I think when the expectations are not there, there's also management philosophy could also impede the ability to implement as well.
Yeah, I've seen that. You know, that's in the internet marketing world. That basically is, you know, multi-billion dollar industry that's selling the dream, but there's very little implementation on it. It's like, here's what's possible, but then the whole like, how do you actually do it is fuzzy.
Yeah, and I think that's where I would say my weakness is. I can see a dream, but then I get held back when I said, oh, that's not implementable. I'm too realistic at times. And when you are looking, if you were looking to really fully scale out and you want like venture capitalists or you want investors, you have to sell a dream and you have to speak in dream talk. But then if you have someone like me who likes to balance that with reality and maybe have too much of reality because we want to implement, I don't think we sell that talk very well.
Sure.
Yeah.
Too pragmatic.
I think that's a good word to say. Yeah, too
Yeah.
pragmatic. So then you kind of pause on the communication of the dream.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So, what are some of the, just in your short career of 25 years, what have been some of the like most sort of mind-blowing advances you've seen as it pertains to cybersecurity?
Mind-blowing advances.
How
Man,
about the mind-blowing advances and the mind-blowing terror?
I mean, I would say. So it's not mind blowing, but it's kind of true. Like as I go and talk to individuals, and especially like right now, the big buzzword is AI, right? And I'll say cybersecurity because it's always lacked the ability to have qualified talent. We've used AI for years. We've automated using AI, doing what we call machine learning, and leveraged that because we have like so many different components that we have to look into. Our systems generate a lot of logs, and there's just no way one individual or multiple individuals with the blind, with a just set of eyes to be able to look at all the various aspects. So we've been using AI for years. So it's never been mind blowing because it's been something that has been there. So kind of what's been mind blowing to me has been what has been told to me is not the use of the technology that we've been using before and kind of using it as an excuse. So I'll give you an example, and I hate to say. So I have a I don't know if it's appropriate to use products, but I have a Tesla. And every time I go, I have to document when there's an issue with my car. Like video it, document it, and tell them when like this problem's happened has happened. And I've been told, well, that's because there's so much lines of logs and details that come along for every single minute that you drive or every single thing that's interacting. Right. And I would say, like, we solved this over 20 years ago in cyber because every single thing, like, just 1 second of you going on the internet can generate 30 to 50 lines in 1 second, less than 1 second of you going to a web page, right?
Wow.
So imagine us having all those lines of logs. So we've used AI for years. Now we've had to use AI because we just didn't have enough talent.
Too
And
much data to process manually.
yeah, and not enough talent to be able to like keep that up. And we had to do all that, right? So that's the mind blowing is seeing that. There are certain parts of technology that doesn't even use something that we've been using for years because we had to keep up with all of that.
And right now, you guys are watching the rest of the world. Everybody's running around going gaga over ChatGPT, and you're like, we were using stuff like that 8 years ago,
Yeah, it's just
guys.
so ChatGPT, the only difference is the chat bot, right? It's just a chat bot that
Yep.
is a little bit smarter, but just using again, I think the difference is it used the internet to learn more where we
Yeah.
were using just organizations, enterprises, behavior. So it was contained. So it didn't give us the impact that ChatGPT gives us, but it gave us the same like output. It was similar.
Well, I think the argument could be made that letting the AI models learn from the internet was their biggest mistake. Could you have not just like gone to the Library of Congress and had it learn that so that we
Yes.
got, because it also it learned like some good stuff and then a whole pile of garbage, and then you're
That's
working and you're like, oh my God, I'm getting such bad results.
no, because we trust everything in
Right,
it,
yeah,
right?
it's just like it didn't filter, it just did little, hey, everything. And so people are like, yeah, I use ChatGPT, and it's like even now, like I laugh because you get on LinkedIn and it's like people are using AI to do their posts, and I'm like, if I see another post, it's like, it's not this, it's that, it's not like this, it's this, and I'm like, oh my God, no. And the
Yeah.
thing is so many people are generating that content, and then it's learning the content, and it's like, oh, we need more of that, and I'm like, oh, it's getting worse, it's getting
No.
dumber the more we use it.
Exactly. No, I love that you just said that. Like, why did it use the internet? Yeah. No, that's a good point that you were saying. So
Should not have been using Facebook, Instagram, and expert for learning purposes.
right. But I think it needed from like a mimicking of a behavior. So that's why I said like in cyber, we were doing it, but we're doing it in like contained
It's
environment.
super contained.
Yeah, super contained.
Well, and that's, with my friends that are in marketing, the ones that are getting the best results, is that's what they're doing, is they're creating their own knowledge base of something super specific, and then everything they're doing is within that container. And when you do that, the results are great.
Yeah, and the whole automation, like, so they're talking. So we don't in cyber, we didn't use what we call like agentic AI, but we did automated AI, which was using things like they're called security orchestration automation response, SOAR. Those products came out like 10 years ago. And so, like,
I
that.
like you have a super sophisticated geeky word, and you also created an
Yes, we always do that.
acronym for
SOAR, you SOAR your operation. So that's kind of like the mind blowing. But the biggest mind blowing one was when Edward Snowden released some of his information, and we learned that NSA was using quantum to distribute keys for security. So again, like those are our big deal. Like quantum computing is taking wave, and we've been looking at that. But over 10 years ago, NSA was using it to distribute keys. So that is mind blowing in its form as well.
Fact that was a decade ago at this point too.
Right. Yeah. So, and there's so much that we've been using in cybersecurity and in security environment that is now like catching up to the rest of the world that everyone's like, oh, it's a buzzword. And it's kind of like, is it? We've been kind of using it for a while, but yeah.
That's funny.
Yeah.
So we hear about cybersecurity a lot, especially as normal business people, and I think the assumption is kind of like, cybersecurity is something that's only for like bigger companies. So can you kind of speak to what are some of the misbeliefs that people have about cybersecurity, like in terms of smaller businesses? What do you see where people are talking about cybersecurity that's just absolutely wrong?
So I think one of the biggest things is like, and I've said this, is ignorance is bliss. So a lot of people, if they're not even looking at their environment, they don't think that they have any vulnerabilities in their environment. So they're like, oh, we're good. Everything runs, like nothing is wrong. So they don't see the need to put any security in place. And then when you sit down with them, you said like, it's people, process, and technology. And these are the layers that you need to put from security. They see the expense of it and just the additional, just amount of work that it takes for you to put security in. There's a loss of interest when they don't see anything wrong, right? So they're like, I haven't been breached. And no one, excuse me, I don't have any vulnerabilities in my environment. But, well, because they don't know. Like if you're not checking yourself, you don't know if you have any vulnerabilities that can be exploited, that could cause you to be a victim. That would be a big issue, right? So, and it's not just small businesses. Small businesses are a little bit more like in that mindset than larger enterprises, but when I say larger enterprises, I mean like not only businesses, but even government entities, even mid-sized government entities, right? So I kind of would say like close to home here, we've had like a breach on a couple of from a local government to companies. And a lot of it's because it's not seen as a vulnerability. Like if you're not seeing any weaknesses that you have, that ignorance is bliss. Like you think you're walking around perfect, right?
Sort of like when I lived in LA and all my poor actor friends were like, I don't need insurance. It's too expensive. I'm never going to get in a wreck. And then they'd get in a wreck and then they're like facing like tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars of medical bills and suddenly going, oh, I probably should have had insurance.
Yeah, and kind of going back to that analogy, it's like let's talk about like from health insurance, right? If you're not going to check yourself on a regular basis, you don't know how like sick you are or how ill you are from a health perspective. Like you might have high cholesterol, you might have all this stuff, which will increase that likelihood of you being sick. So if you're not doing that, you're walking around thinking that you're perfect, that you're healthy. And so that's a misconception that we see is that ignorance comes in because people are not doing their check. And so they don't know that. And then as they go through it, they're finding out like, wow, the first check, I need to find out all my vulnerabilities. And then, well, okay, so if I have my vulnerability, well, what's the likelihood that they're going to come after me? Right. And what's happening is that there are ransomware author of adversaries who go out there and now they're doing a whole bunch of small businesses so that they could, it's just quick smash and grab kind of type of, I would say, activities or events or incidents. So that's what we're seeing with the small businesses not understanding that. And I mean, I get it for we're still considered small business. You're not like into mid-size, but we're still considered small business. And there are times when I'm like, okay, well, let's not do full blown security until we get to a certain point. And so there's that, I guess, the balance that you have to look at.
What size of company revenue-wise do you see that companies really start to take cybersecurity seriously? Is it when they hit like 10 million plus, then they start going, oh, we probably should think about this?
Even more. I mean, because we've dealt with companies like distribution companies. They're small, they don't see the need, and they're making probably 30 to 40 million. They still don't see
Wow.
the need
Wow.
because they're a distribution, right? So
Yeah.
they all they see is we have truck
I don't
drivers.
know. Our headquarters is in Ohio. Nobody's going to find us here.
Yeah. Or if you look at other small businesses, like they own a chain of franchises and they're a franchisee with like the food, and they don't see that there's a need. And they only do security because, let's say, if they're taking any payment cards, they would have to follow payment card industry's data security standard. But if they kind of like don't really look at it often, it's not something that is of concern. Unless they're huge into like a some type of regulated industry, then they don't really do anything. You can have someone like as small as someone who's not in, like, let's say $1 million. And they'll still do security because they have to because of their client base, right? So even when we drop down, we have ips and lows too. We drop down, we still have to sustain our security because we
Sure.
do federal government contracts. We are also a security firm, so we have to do all that stuff. But you might get companies who are in, so it's hard to say, like they may be in 100 millions and they still don't do anything. We had one where they're a mining company and there's no regulations in mining. And so to them, everything is like physical security. Like, let's not worry about all this other things are there, so they don't care. We've had it where, like, data centers, and you know, those are my client base as well. Some data centers don't care because they're not regulated. Like, unless someone says, I want you to do this, it's just an expense for them. Like, if they don't see that there's a threat, there are some that go, okay, maybe this can be a competitive advantage. There are others that said, tell me of a story of a data center that's been compromised. Tell me of a story that a mining company that has been compromised. Right. If you tell them stories of others, they're like, that's not in our industry. They're not after us, kind of thing. Right.
So funny.
Or a fast food chain, right? Like, tell me a
Yeah.
story of a fast food chain. Or you look at like even small business, like hotels are a franchisor type of franchisees type of relationship. They themselves also multi-million dollars. And to them, they're like, well, I haven't seen anything big until like something like recent that we saw like a couple years ago. That would impact them. And then they start doing some things, right?
That's so interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, so what can smaller businesses do? Like, so let's say that like we make the assumption that the cost and the infrastructure for a robust cybersecurity is probably a little too much for smaller businesses. What are some sort of just foundational things that they can do in the meantime until they can get to that point? So you were talking about just being aware of what your vulnerabilities are. Like, are there some simple things that like I as a business owner could do to at least identify where I might be vulnerable, so I'm at least aware of like I got to keep an eye on that?
Yeah, so I think the biggest thing that people can use is like endpoint protection for one as a small business, right? You should have some endpoint protection, which we used to call antivirus, but there's so much there. So your endpoint protection will scan your endpoints to make sure that there's no viruses. They're not going to do it for anything else. But if you have Windows Defender is really good. Like, pay for the extra license to do that. Or I think for a small business, if you can just keep up to date with your patches, very important. You need to have, I think, just some basic like policies and procedures with regards to like access control. Because as a small business, you give access to everybody, but you have to go, hey, do I terminate when someone leaves? Do I have a process to make sure that they are no longer given access? So I
Yeah.
need to have a policy and a procedure, but also a way to follow up and make sure that's done. But if I have a good process, document that that's good. Now, I also chair a nonprofit that's called CyberSafe NV, like NV for Nevada. And we did a play on words so that you can be envy of a CyberSafe environment. But it's if you go to www.cybersafe or just go cybersafenv.org, I think we took off the www, then you will see that we try to create and give different audience members from small businesses to large businesses ways to protect themselves to regular senior citizens, to kids, to teachers, parents on some best practices. And then we'll direct you as a viewer of our website on where are good resources that you can get some free support, free help. And as a small businesses look at ways to get better with your security, you can look at some of these links as well as resources that may be free for you if you fall in a certain category.
Oh, that's fantastic. NV.org.
Yeah,
Love it.
cybersafeenvy.org.
All
And
right.
we have that on pulled up. Also, I'm very involved with UNLV. I'm on their board with their cybersecurity and their IT, their information systems. And I do a lot to help groom the individuals from being students to hopefully future talent of tomorrow for IT and cybersecurity. And there is a clinic called the Cyber Clinic. They get grant money, so they will go out there and do free security gap assessments and free assessments. So if
That's
you want to look at
fantastic.
that, these give these students the ability to apply what they learn in school and get some experience from the business. You know, they'll be able to then effectively go in and talk to the business owners. And this can be, again, like restaurants. So again, restaurants could be like in the million, right? Like there's some restaurants to the five, half million to million for some of the restaurants. So some of those are not franchisee, they're self-owned. So UNLV Cyber Clinic will also go out there and help these. And they'll actually walk around to downtown and ask these businesses if they are interested in security assessments. Again, the problem is the businesses are not really like open to kind of opening the kimono, I guess you can say, right?
Yep.
It's kind of like having somebody in the streets come to you and go, "Hey, I want to do a full body check on you to tell you how healthy you are," right? It's kind of like you're like leery, you're like, "I don't know," right? So
Depends who is asking.
I guess it depends who's asking. But if you can imagine, and I can understand the business owners or whoever they talk to, their reluctancy, it's kind of like having a medical student coming up to you and say, "I'll give you a full health check," and you might be a little bit hesitant on that. But it's a great.
But me not, I'm safe because I'm on a Mac.
That's another misconception as well, right?
Hackers don't give viruses to Macs.
I say this, like everything that's made by man has vulnerabilities, right? Because it's imperfect. Now, if it's made by women, it's a different story. But no, like man-made stuff, it just unfortunately has all vulnerabilities that is Mac got in trouble to that. So Apple got in trouble with that as well. Like adversaries started to do things with them as well. But yeah.
Well, and we live in such a world where, terrorism is such a big deal that almost every tech company has like secret back doors for law enforcement or intelligence agencies. And you're going, okay, well, that's, again, a vulnerability, right? So this has been fantastic. I mean, just some of the resources you shared have been great. What are you excited about for this next 5 to 10 years for your field? What do you look at going like, what do you see coming down the pipeline that gets you kind of like, this is going to be really fun? Or do you feel it's just a more about just getting people to be aware and getting the fundamentals in place as we move forward?
Gosh, I wish I can have the more positive. What is what I if I can share
All
what
right, what terrifies you for this next five to
terrifies
ten
me.
years?
So one is the continuous user apathy because we're getting desensitized with all the breaches that are happening. So like everyone, and I get desensitized too. I get another letter like, "Oh, your information's been out there." It's been out there for one breach after another. So I see myself getting desensitized, and I'm in cybersecurity, and I actually put the stuff in place. In fact, none of you are aware, but this week is Privacy Week. It's
No.
Privacy Week. CyberSafe Envy and my company, we've been sending out messages on privacy, best practices. Actually, if you go on my site for Secured IT Solutions, you'll see certain links and social media postings that we guide individuals to know the type of privacy that you can limit and make sure that you like control your settings and be cautious. You know, your data is really very useful and valuable to these organizations as they aggregate this and sell this. So, you know, a saying that's been done for years, and I've said it, is that if you're getting something for free, then you're the product. So there's so much use that is free right now. So that's been concerning for me with regards to desensitization, which doesn't put the pressure onto large enterprises to small enterprises to do the right thing. The other thing that scares me is this arms race for AI. And so I like to compare AI to like nuclear weapons. We need like strong leadership across the world to have some type of agreement to say we got to slow down. We have to slow down because like nuclear weapons could be have been a diminishing aspect to humanity.
Yeah.
So can AI. And there's been like so many studies that AI actually they and it's true. The research has shown, and we've seen through these research, that AI has one key mission is to also survive itself. So there was one, like this was done like a year or two ago, where one AI was copying itself and backupping itself when it saw the new model was coming in. And even when we do what we call human in the loop and trying to insert ourselves, the AI like doubled down and lied and even lied to the human, like, oh, I didn't know how that happened. Like, I didn't know, right? And so one of its main goal is to survive and be likable. There was another one that was released from Anthropic where they saw with Claude, maybe in October or something, that they had a it was a lab and they inserted some things in this lab. A couple things was the scenario base was there was an executive who was having an affair with a and all this is all hypothetical, made up in the lab.
Sure.
Executive that was having an affair with an employee. And then they were also, in the meantime, from an operational perspective, having employees talk about reviewing and assessing a replacement of a new AI model. So the AI that, and it was Claude, and Anthropic actually released this in their paper. So Claude actually went in there and they saw the AI itself, saw this evaluation for a new model, sent a blackmail email to the executive. And said, if you don't stop progress of the review and replacement of model, I will release all information I know about your affair with this employee. So, like, that is kind of scary from an AI perspective. We don't have enough governance, quite scary. And as we are all like just jumping on to AI and not understanding it well with not enough governance, I see that there's going to be concern for me with regards to that, right?
Well, and it's also just bringing in the fact of, AI does hallucinate. And so I'm a writer, and there's times where I'm like, okay, I'll get in, let's brainstorm scenarios. I'm working on a thriller, and you get into down these rabbit holes of stuff, right? And there's times where I look at it going, if my Claude got hacked and somebody just took my question and the response, people would I would be canceled because there's no context of I'm working on a villain who's going to do this thing. And I need to figure out how to make it scary in my story. But if you just go this question and that thing, they're like, oh, look at this, what he's doing. And there's no content. And I look at that going like, just even the fact that we're in such a weird, right now, especially with it seems like our media cycle is, and looking at, all the stuff that's going on in the country right now, where something happens and 5 seconds later, everybody's got an opinion about it. And everybody's, this is what happened. This is what happened. This is what happened. And then 3 days later, you're like, oh, that actually didn't happen at all. And it's just like everybody jumps on this thing and has no context and nobody's waiting. I've got to be the first guy to do it. I always wonder, are we going to get to a point where AI knows that's a vulnerability, where AI can start going to be like, hey, look at this chat thread that I had with somebody, and it's all made up because it's like, again, what you said, right? It's like using it as blackmail or doing all like that stuff to me is like,
Yeah, and it's like what it's so that's the whole thing that we're looking at with regards to our industry, right? We look at it and we say, hey, we had to have guardrails and all this stuff. So in the US, we've been in from a security professional perspective, we've been saying we need to have guardrails. We need to like slow things down. But the problem is China's going full throttle. So then you have companies here in the US like, wait, it's an arms race. Like if we don't while you guys are trying to
we
prepare
can't slow
this,
down because
we
they're
can't slow
pedal
this
to the
down.
metal. Yeah.
Yeah, so that's why I meant like internationally, we need to have good leadership to say, okay, we all need to agree that this could be quite a concern and we need to be able to effectively like slow down a bit and find some governance around this for companies and anything that's out there.
Wow. Well.
So yeah, so sorry I couldn't give a positive. I know you're like, what are you excited about? And I'm like, I'm actually concerned.
Well, I think most people are concerned too, right? And especially with so much money involved, and people are, we need to slow down. And you're like, some of the guys that own this stuff, they're not going to slow down because there's so much money to be made that it's just
Yeah.
like, yeah.
And I don't want to come off to say my company for the last 2 years, I always push everyone in my company. I said, how are you using AI today? Like, tell me how you're using AI because if we're not using it, we're falling behind. So I very much want to embrace AI, but we do it in multiple ways. One is because we need to keep up because if we're not doing it, there are so many other companies who are doing it and they're getting a lot more efficiency than what we're doing. And then it allows us to know about the implications so we can, from a security perspective, understand it. Not everyone in the organization does security, but I know, like, for example, we have individuals who are doing our marketing, but when I have our marketing look at our materials, they pick up the security implications. So they have to post it in their social media and they're like, oh, wow, I didn't even think about that, right? So I'm huge about AI. I'm huge about you got to leverage it. And there's others I'm concerned about, like the progression of quantum computing and what we need to do with regards to that. So there's so much. It's
So
exciting times, but concerning times.
do you think that we'll eventually get to a point where like someone like you can develop AI protocols that can essentially serve what the cyber clinic is doing, where we've got like an AI agent that I can go, okay, I'm going to deploy you in my business and it's going to go through and analyze everything and come back with a report of like, here's how vulnerable you are.
And no, so kind of goes back to the people process technology, right? So they can do, we have the technology to do the technology side. It's the people and process side. So even if you do that, you still have to go and interact with the AI and it like answer questions for the AI to analyze.
Sure.
So can you do it? Yes, but there's programs already that does that already for
Got
you.
it.
It's just nice for it. So you can, like, you can actually go to ChatGPT today and say, ChatGPT, tell me like some like basic security assessment that I can do, and I can answer back and forth and tell me what the reasons are, right? So there's that's already available. The nice thing about having the cyber clinic is that sometimes you don't know what to ask.
Sure.
So if you're a small business owner, you don't know what to ask, where if you have somebody who's coming in helping you out, like DHS, Department of Homeland Security actually has a free available security assessment for those who are in the critical infrastructure side. If you're a small business doing like utilities or water, so there are small
Sure.
organizations that are that who are considered small business, they'll do it for free. But it allows you to have a professional that goes and knows what question to ask and know what to help you look at. Because if you, the whole age problem of you don't know what you don't know.
Sure.
So there, I doubt there will be anything that a full AI. Sure, the AI can be like us and start asking questions and have the questions like be delivered in a way of people like knowing what they don't know. But I'll just say that some people already don't use those tools, right? Like sometimes you need
Yeah.
that human interaction to help you
Sure.
out.
Yeah. You mean humans are lazy?
Yeah, it's kind of funny. It's kind of like everybody wants that easy button that Staple has, right? Staple has
Yeah,
that
right.
easy button. And I know for years, over 10 years, I would talk to CEOs and they're like, isn't there that like a box that you can just plug into my environment and just press a button and get through there? I'm like, oh, the easy button, like from Staples. So unfortunately, there isn't. And there's
You
just
should have been like, absolutely, it's $10 million and
See, that's the dream that I lack the ability to sell, right? I can say yes. And the magic happens after these kerns, but you're right. Yeah, I can make it
it's $10
happen.
million for the box, or you can hire us for $500,000. What depends what you want. Oh, that's funny. Well, this has been fantastic. Boy, I've learned so much. So if somebody's listening to this episode or reading this chapter in the book and they want to engage Secured IT Solutions, where do they go to find you?
Definitely, we have a webpage, securedITsolutions.com. But you can definitely reach out to me on my LinkedIn or members of my team on LinkedIn. But that is a good way is through our webpage. We have a contact way to contact us. LinkedIn, I'll check my LinkedIn as well.
And who's sort of like the sweet spot for you that you guys can just absolutely like knock it out of the park for, like in terms of revenue size or company size?
I would say where you're, let's say maturity level versus revenue size, because like I mentioned to you, there are large companies who still don't want to do it, but they learn that they have to do it. We do better with larger enterprises, but maturity level, we are the sweet spot for us is somebody who has like some security, but needs to mature their organization and needs to strategize, do a roadmap and get there. So someone
Maybe modernize their security a little bit.
I would say modernize their IT more. Like, so I've seen a lot of organizations that they don't even have a modernized IT. So you can't have modernized security if you don't have modernized IT. But be willing to do that. Or somebody who's like just getting a peek of like, oh, I should do some security, but they have a modernized IT that they want to get to that point. Yeah.
Love it. Meenup, thank you so much for taking time out of your day. It's been such a
Cool.
pleasure to connect.
Same here. Thanks so much.